We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrand. Joining me, as always, over there in beautiful, in wintry, blustery Chicagoland. Northwestern not playing this week, so I'd imagine a little bit more subdued in the fine parts of Evanston. But how are you, Dan?
I wasn't in Evanston yesterday, but I can tell you I'm pretty good. I took the solid toddler to a park before the game started, and as the game started, fully empty. So I don't know if that's nerves from Northwestern fans thinking, oh man, we got to watch closely. We don't know what's going to happen with the end of the season and Northwestern figuring out a way to win the national championship. We got to be scouting these early games, or they're just ready for next year, because it was always going to build. It's Northwestern's always looking forward, Ty, always looking forward. You know that.
Yeah. And you sent me a photo from what I believe would have to be that walk of someone in the neighborhood, maybe Clark Griswold, with the Christmas decorations.
Yeah, they go big. I mean, look, it's the home of Home Alone, the North Shore of Chicago, Ty.
True, so very true.
This is a holiday-focused area, Ty. So, I know, yeah, they go big around here.
But you're right, for sure. I just have never seen the move where the inflatable Christmas decoration is so big and sort of so without normal space in the yard that they decide that they're going to blow it up and have part of the reindeer sticking out through like the front porch. Never seen that before.
They really go for it. There's a house not far from me that they've got the, I don't know if it's the Nutcracker type figures, like 6 feet tall as like guardians of the home, robust figures like tied to the porch. It's a very serious business around here, Ty. You got to get with it.
Well, there's a 12-foot Santa across the street from me, and I'm going to put my reindeer out today, but none of them are quite as robust.
Yeah. And with that, week 14.
With that, week 14, welcome back, one and all. I am Ty. He is Dan. This is the Solid Verbal. Don't forget to go to our website, solidverbal.com, for all the info on how you can subscribe to this here fine show. We're going to keep going, you know, the season, I guess, technically the regular season, maybe going a week or two, depending on which team you're talking about. We've obviously got conference championship games on the 19th, which we're going to get into, but we're going to go all throughout the rest of this regular season, all throughout bowl season and the off season. That's just what we do here. And speaking of that, with regard to bowl season, Dan, we do have some news here that's exciting.
Hit me.
We teased this out a little bit on the shows that we did over the past week. But so typically what we do on this show is we have a huge confidence pool on ESPN.com.
Right.
Huge confidence pool, ESPN.com. People get into it. We have thousands upon thousands of entries in that thing. We're going to do that again. That's not going anywhere. We would encourage everybody to jump on in. We'll post details as soon as we can on that front. The other thing that we are doing this year that we haven't done in the past and that we're super excited about, we put a ton of work in on this thing this week. So I'm
sure
I am pumped to see how this goes down. Go on out to playwinterwonders.com. Playwinterwonders.com, Dan. You got that?
I do, because I came up with the very silly term Winter Wonders in reference to teams that have players that don't just perform September through early December, late November, but January type dudes. So I got it. Playwinterwonders.com.
Playwinterwonders.com. It is our game. It is only for our elite community of Patreon subscribers. If you go on out to that URL, you will find all the information you need on how the game works and how you can sign up for our Patreon if you have not already. The game, obviously, will take greater effect once there are games to be had, once the games are announced, once we know who's playing in which bowl games. But whereas a typical confidence pool would just be you're picking the winner of a game and you're telling us how many confidence points you want to put on it, the Winter Wonders game is a little bit more nuanced. It's sort of a collaboration of all the things that we do in a standard weekly pick show. So you're going to be able to pick games against the spread. You're also going to be asked to pick some prop bets. You know, how many yards will Mac Jones throw for? Things of that nature. Also, the added dimension of this game is we're going to add in some of our fantasy things style prop bets as well. So things that we make up. You know, how many times will they reference Michael Mayer as Baby Gronk in his presumed playoff game? Or how many times will they talk about COVID protocols during this football game? All sorts of weird nuance.
How many coaches get fired between this period and this period? Well, you know, things, it's a solid verbal creative orgy, Ty. I think that's exactly what you're trying to say.
That's exactly right.
So, it's all sorts of straightforward football things, fantasy things in prop form. And prize-wise, Ty, we're talking one of one, correct?
Limited edition.
Yeah. Prize-wise, one of one. Solid verbal ugly sweater. I don't know if it's going to be an ugly sweater t-shirt, an ugly sweater crew neck sweatshirt, or a full-on ugly sweater, but one of one, Ty. One of one.
Playwinterwonders.com. We're going to be talking about this now for the remainder of the regular season and conference championship weeks and right up until bowl time. You have plenty of time to get in on the action here, but go to playwinterwonders.com again for more info on how you can take part in that. We're also going to put up a link on the Patreon so that you have more info as well if you're already over there.
The most fun fantasy-ish bowl pick'em-ish situation enterprise that we've ever been involved with. Genuinely excited for it.
Okay. Yeah. That being said, in the perfect tribute to the year 2020, the game of the year might be one that came together 3 days prior to actually being played due to COVID scheduling mishaps. Is that fair to say?
It is a very 2020 thing, yes, that we had two undefeated teams at the end of the year playing each other with legitimate January implications, and it happens to be between a Sun Belt team and an FBS independent team. Yeah, it's all over the place. I love it.
Coastal Carolina versus BYU may have been the best game of the day. We have many other games to get through here on the Solid Verbal, but why don't we get rolling where we always do? Let's have a listen to your reverbs.
I have more faith in Beavis and Butthead scoring than TCU scoring on offense.
Dan, Ty, this is Nate calling from Princeton, New Jersey.
Dan, Ty, it's Andrew from Des Moines.
Dan, Ty, Patrick from Atlanta, Auburn fan, frustrated. Feed tank, Big Z Moore.
Calling from the college football hotbed that is the Bay Area, where Cal beat Oregon, Justin Wilcox beats his alma mater for the first time, Cameron Good has done everything and then some on defense, and the core receivers just keep getting better. Oh, and the 5-0 San Jose State Spartans, who ran all over Hawaii And when they did have to go to the air, they turned to Trey Walker, the best receiver you haven't heard of. Buy stock now. Go Bears and Spartan up.
Hey guys, this is Will in Minnesota calling. I just want to give a shout out to the pride of Shelby, Ohio, Brennan Armstrong with 417 total yards in Virginia's win over Boston College today.
Dude alert again for Haskell Garrett. Guy gets shot in the face during the offseason through both cheeks. Expected never to play football again. Comes back, he's a starter for Ohio State, and then does the tip drill to himself in the end zone as a defensive tackle. Touchdown Buckeyes, go Bucks.
Might I suggest to Dan that perhaps with his Ducks now losing two in a row in the Pac-12, that maybe what they need to do is quit the Pac-12 and go independent, since being an independent is so easy and all.
You know what happens when Syracuse plays Notre Dame? Those record books? Yep. Just gotta throw them out. Go Orange.
Hi, this is Andrew from Philadelphia, and I would like to congratulate my Nittany Lions on their 900th career win. Although this season has not gone the way we wanted to, it is good to get a milestone like that. We are.
This is Harrison in West Lafayette, and I just gotta ask, does Jeff Brohm have a little bit of Scott Frost in him?
This is Seth calling in Denver, Colorado, and you, yes, you listening, and probably your second cousin, just missed tackling Bo Nix. Attaboy, go Auburn.
Not gonna lie, at 10-all, I thought the Hokies had a chance. That'll teach me.
Just finished watching my Cyclones roll West Virginia Mountaineers. Wanted to ask, have you guys heard of the running back in Ames? He's automatic. He's systematic. He's hydromatic. Why, he's Brees Lightning. Sound those sirens, baby. Roll Clones.
Hey, Dan, Ty, this is Scott from Raleigh. How about that Wolfpack? 8-3. Hey, Dan, did you see how NC State won 8 games with Tim Beck?
Connor Bazelak, most poised quarterback in the country. MIZZOU.
I sat through a lot of bad Penn State football. But thankfully we had BYU and Coastal Carolina's night to remind me for why college football is such a great sport. Let's go, shout the clears.
This is Caleb in Dallas, and I just watched the end of one of the greatest games I've ever seen. And hats off to the BYU Cougars. Even though they came up a yard short, they had the testicular fortitude to fly across country to play a smoking hot Coastal Carolina, and they came just short of winning in hostile territory. I got to give my tip of the hat to the BYU Cougars.
I'd like to take a moment to appreciate the totality of circumstances that the BYU Coastal Carolina game gave us. In a year full of sadness, disappointment, and despair, these two teams showed up and showed out, putting on an absolute classic that will go down in history, not for the result, but the overall impact on the season, but for proving the fact that the human spirit can overcome any obstacle put in front of it. No lie, no shame. I shed a tear at kickoff, and many more when it hit me exactly how big this moment was. This is why we love this sport, because moments like these just can't come from anywhere else. All that aside, this begs the question, is the backup tier of college football more exciting than the starter?
Yeah.
All right, Dan. That was
It is, Ty. It is.
An emotional end to our reverb segment.
I wanted to like
here,
salute like. Like as he was saying, that's what I heard in my head.
Very, very cool. A bunch of great messages in there. Thank you so much for dialing in. Again, it's 408 Verbal 1. We open it every weekend. Why don't we start with that Coastal game since a lot of our callers were as enthusiastic about it as we were. You know, I posted this in our Patreon Discord server, but just like, again, what a testament to this weird season. What a testament to this weird season that this was kind of going to be the game that, you know, got the most fanfare on the backside of the week. The so-called Mormons versus Mullets game got a little testy. We had a scuffle right before halftime. Coastal seemingly trying to take out Zach Wilson on multiple occasions. So I understand a bit of the hostility there, but
sure.
Let's start here. Probably the first time for many people listening to this show, many people, college football fans throughout the country, watching Coastal Carolina play. Maybe even watching BYU play this season.
Could be.
But on the Coastal side, they're fun as hell on offense. If you haven't seen them before, it's the way I would describe their offense is it's a little bit of every trendy offense I've ever seen. Got a little bit of everything, whatever you're into. You like the option, you like the spread, you like, whatever. You got a little bit of everything there.
It's a good Vegas buffet.
Good Vegas buffet, I think, is a great way to phrase it.
Yeah.
Their quarterback, Grayson McCall, who we've talked about time and again on this show, he's absolutely the real deal. Did not have a great stat line, but didn't need to. He manages that offense very, very well. And this was a game that truly came right down to the wire. I can detail the final drive where BYU came up about a yard short, but not a high scoring affair. A little bit of everything here. And Coastal does prevail at home again in a game that came together like 72 hours before it was actually played.
Yeah. Well, I think just from a football perspective, because the story itself is good, but Coastal's defense tightening up when they needed to against BYU's offense. They gave up some bigger plays, I believe, on the ground. It was Tyler something who was able to move the ball. I don't remember his
Tyler
last name.
Algier.
Tyler Algier. Thank you very much. BYU able to move the ball on the ground, but just not close out drives. Coastal with the offense that you described with 2-3 backs at times in that backfield. Just crazy impressive, situationally impressive. Though, I don't know how you felt at the end of that game with 4th and 2, with BYU having no timeouts at midfield, needing 2 yards to just close it out. Coastal punted. And just, I think judging the risks involved with giving Zach Wilson 50 yards versus perhaps more, or just putting the game away with the ball in your hands, I disagreed with it. I don't think the ends necessarily justify the means, because they came up about, I don't know, 44 inches short, something like that. So I guess it justifies not giving Zach Wilson the ball at midfield, but certainly giving Zach Wilson the ball at all seemed pretty dangerous, even with no timeouts.
Yeah.
So I don't know how you felt about that decision, but I usually like offenses, and I know Coastal hasn't been great this year in high leverage, short yardage situations.
Right.
That's where I was. Their power element hasn't been great. I looked up that this morning, but I don't know. They're moving the ball pretty well on the ground all game long. You had a gas BYU defense.
Especially an offense that offers so many different looks and so many different people who can run.
Literal options, yes.
Literal options, yeah. It was curious. What it came down to was BYU needed to engineer an 82-yard drive. Naturally, on the first play of that drive.
Got backed up.
Yeah, they get backed up. So it turns into a 92-yard drive. After they get called for holding, they got 35 seconds, no timeouts. Zach Wilson damn near got the job done, to your point. Completes a long pass to Gunnar Romney, then a 12-yarder to Tyler Algier, then 3 in a row to Dax Milne. The last one is the one we're referencing here. Came up about a yard short at the goal line as time expired. Coastal obviously stays undefeated at 10-0. They still have Troy and Louisiana left on its schedule. Mm-hmm. So Troy should be a win. Louisiana is going to be a tough one. They've been tough all year. We'll get to that one as it comes about here, I guess, in week 15 or 16, whatever. Week's just a construct, Dan. Doesn't even matter. But yeah.
Well, they have beaten Louisiana on the road already, Coastal.
Have beaten Louisiana on the road, for sure.
Yeah.
So, big win here for Coastal Carolina. And as our caller pointed out, kudos to BYU for going cross-country, deciding that they wanted to do this thing at all. I think that was a great move.
Oh, 1,000%. In San Jose State, undefeated, lurking tie. Now that we've got one undefeated pseudo G5 out in BYU, we got the Screaming Spartans. We should probably get into other games before we talk about San Jose State's marvelous start to the season, but I'm just saying.
All right. Where do you want to go next, Dan? What else really stood out to you in week 14?
I suppose the SEC, just between Alabama, LSU, and just what that game and its weight usually has, Auburn, Texas A&M, Florida, Tennessee. Not that there was a ton of drama in those games, but I think there are things to extrapolate from the SEC's Saturday.
Well, for sure. And let's start with that Alabama, LSU game. 55-17 was the final score in favor of the Crimson Tide. I feel like it's worth mentioning again. Alabama covered a 28.5 point spread by 10 points.
Yeah.
By 10 points. A couple years ago, this was a 9-6 game. And last year, it was a thriller, 46-41, something like that, in favor of LSU amid their title run. We're not even in the same galaxy as those games this season. It has obviously been a rough go of things for LSU. And this was not pretty. This was kind of an expected result. It just is still a little bit jarring. Even though we knew it was coming, it's just jarring to look at that final score, to watch the games, to then go and look after the fact at the stat line and just see how lopsided this one was. It was 45-14 at half, 650 total yards for Bama. Just a highlight reel for Mac Jones, Najee Harris, Devontae Smith. Devontae Smith had a monster game, 8 catches, 231 and 3 touchdowns. Mac Jones with 4 touchdowns to add to his tally. Like, everything that could go right for Bama did, and this one was over by half.
Yeah, well, it was over by the end of the first quarter when it was 21-0. And this was a recruiting final score. This is a Nick Saban in the living room of top flight kids in Louisiana, East Texas, the Atlanta metro area, wherever, and saying, you want to go to LSU? Who's throwing you the ball? Who's throwing you the ball, five-star receiver? Who's your defensive coordinator at LSU? That's where you want to go? Okay, well, 55-17. And wasn't even that close. That's the threes for the majority of the second half. That's, you know, just ground and pound and running the clock out. So, yeah, that's what that final score is. That there was no reason to pick against and take those points. So, man, Alabama. Devontae Smith, I tweeted this out during the game. He's mastered wide receiver. Like, he's a retired dude at this point. He goes for, what, 215 in the first half?
Oh, okay, right. 231
in the first half alone.
Yeah.
215, I think, was his first half line. Where it's just like, why is he still playing receiver? Like, his mastery and his ability to master athletics could be used in, he could be playing lacrosse, he could be playing soccer, he could be a lockdown closer on the baseball team. Like, he is, football is something that is already done for him. He is a locked in dude and just a joy to watch. And
yeah, I mean,
unless you're anybody else.
And this
is
sort of my point when they lost Jalen Waddle. Not that losing Jalen Waddle didn't have some impact. Obviously, it did.
Right.
They're a little thinner at wide receiver. They clearly have backups, but Devontae Smith, has really stepped up and he's really answered the call here. Mac Jones has seemingly not skipped any beats. So.
Yeah,
Alabama keeps on rolling. They win this one handily again, 55-17 over LSU.
I do love, by the way, Ty, when a receiver is so good that everybody says, well, there's no Jalen Waddle. All we need to do is stop Devontae Smith. Yeah, all you need to do is stop Devontae Smith. That's it. That's all.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And it's just made him angry. Okay. Yeah, I at this point, I think he should be in New York or whatever version of the Heisman ceremony exists in 2020, right?
Well, we'll see.
Is he better at playing receiver than anybody is at playing their position? I might argue yes.
He certainly has.
Here I am arguing yes.
Yeah, you're arguing yes. He certainly has numbers that would back up that argument. So the other big game in the SEC, there were several games that we're going to talk about, but the other, I guess, headliner was A&M against the Auburn Tigers. A&M comes away a 31-20 victor, and they needed to have this one, frankly. If they wanted to have a puncher's chance at the playoff, they needed to have this one, and they trailed going to the fourth quarter. They were down 20-14, but scored 17 unanswered. They ended up winning by 11, a good way to close this one out. I'm curious to get how you would classify this effort from A&M because, you know, I look at this game, they clearly committed to the run, 47 rushing attempts, 313 yards, a really efficient day for Kellen Mond, who played a clean game at quarterback. It's not the kind of game where if you go and look at the stats, it's going to jump off the page at you. If you watch most of this game, it's probably not going to, you know, burn a hole in your memory. But I think A&M, their ability to go on the road here and get this W, especially trailing late, is significant. It's significant. Auburn is many things that aren't good, but in big games like this, here and there, they do come to play. even though they built the whole thing out of Bo Nix, they were probably good enough to win this game, if not for A&M in that late surge. So I don't know. Where do you put this A&M win if you're trying to keep it in context with what we've seen from them throughout the course of the season and what we've seen throughout the course of the SEC season?
Yeah, it's something I talked about and we talked about going in, that A&M's going to have to win this game without making big plays downfield, because that's not how they've been able to win. Jalen Weidermeyer is their leading receiver. They just need to make plays, keep chains going, rely on what has been a largely very good defense, a good offensive line, a running game that has come together very impressively, a mostly very good Kellen Mond, short of his performance last week. And it's running the 800. You've watched the Olympics. You've watched track and field, where you just sort of hang with the pack for, I couldn't tell you, our friend West Coast Kevin could do a better job of this, like 650 of the 800 meters. And then it's that late kick, right? It's the teams that are best set up depth-wise, conditioning-wise, discipline-wise. Kellen Mond, clean game. Didn't succeed a lot downfield. Isaiah Spiller, impressive. Just looked at lanes that the offensive line gave him. And while A&M did make mistakes and couldn't finish certain drives, they didn't panic, right? They rolled with what was working for them, knowing that not much was working for Auburn, knowing that the Auburn passing game couldn't really get going, knowing yeah. that outside of a longer Tank Bigsby run and kind of a miraculous Bo Nix escape, the crazy sack-filled backfield and run it in for a touchdown, that was just an incredible play. That's what Auburn needed to succeed. And when a team needs miracles to succeed, don't panic, because you're in a better place. And that's the maturity of Texas A&M. They've lost this matchup, I think, three straight years coming into this game. Just do your thing and win. And so I was impressed with the maturity and poise of Texas A&M to play four full quarters and not freak out down whatever that was, 20-14 or something like that.
Yeah.
So right. I came away impressed from a maturity standpoint from this team.
Let me ask you this real quick. Then we have, believe me, dozens of other games to talk about.
Many.
Is A&M good enough to beat any of the teams in front of them in the playoff rankings? Are they good enough to beat?
Well, I've seen an Alabama matchup against A&M.
So are they good enough to beat a Notre Dame, a Clemson, or an Ohio State?
Well, you have the interesting student teacher Mike Elko, Clark Lee matchup, right? In that scenario.
True.
Is A&M good enough to beat Clemson, Notre Dame, or Ohio State? With their lines, with their defense, I think good Kellen Mond can make it interesting. I don't think they have the winter wonders at receiver to beat Alabama and score 38-45 points against Alabama. I just don't. Notre Dame is prone to some slow fits and starts, right? We've mm-hmm. seen them play down, but I trust Notre Dame somewhat in a playoff game against a non-crazy elite quarterback, which Kalamon's good, but he's not that. Ohio State, I don't think they fit well with how you beat Ohio State, which is really challenging them deep. And so I would say their best shot is probably in that Clemson-Notre Dame zone, because I think they match up relatively well against Notre Dame, in that you don't need to score a ton of points to beat Notre Dame, right? If you're able to keep Ian Book in front of you, which I think Texas A&M largely can do, they can beat Notre Dame 23-20. I would still take all of those teams over A&M, just because I think the floor of Kellen Mond scares me more than the floor of the other quarterbacks.
That's a good answer, Dan. It's almost as if you were scripted on that one, but you weren't. I know you weren't.
No, you put me on the spot.
All right. Florida, 31, Tennessee, 19. Another ho-hum, 433 yards, four touchdowns for the king of calm, Kyle Trask, Dan. In contrast to committing to the run the way A&M did, how about just straight up committing to the pass the way Florida did? They practically went air raid in this game. 49 passing attempts, just 17 rushing attempts. Damian Pierce had the most carries with 5 for the Gators.
Yeah, well, nothing was there. Absolutely nothing was there. They had a 17-yard run and 19 yards total, I guess, including sack yardage.
But they just straight up passed the ball. Passed the ball to great effect. Do not be fooled into thinking this was a close game. This was 31-7 until Tennessee got some points in garbage time.
Yeah.
And again, you know what they say about playing three quarterbacks, Dan. If you're Tennessee, when you play three quarterbacks, we already knew they had none. We don't have to make the joke again. But the quarterback position remains a huge eyesore for the Vols. They got to figure something out there if Jeremy Pruitt wants to really move the program forward. Again, they legit have nobody at quarterback right now. And it came back to bite them. Forget the 12 garbage time points they got here. This was not a close football game.
No, but moral victories are dumb. Tennessee on defense made Florida earn things in a way that not a lot of teams have. You know, Kyle Trask succeeded because he was by far and away the best quarterback in this game and has good receivers and has, you know, probably the best pass catching option outside of Devontae Smith and Kyle Pitts and maybe Elijah Moore, but in terms of tight end for sure in the country. So the weapons are there for Florida's offense. I worry about the ability to counter, right? That even though Florida was able to outpace Tennessee on the road in a rivalry spot, if Florida can't run the ball against Tennessee, they're not winning because of the run. But they're able to do things based on what the run can set up. So Tennessee making Florida one-dimensional, even in a comfortable loss, worries me a little bit if we're talking about Florida as a potential playoff team. I worry about the Florida defense still, just a little bit, because what was Tennessee able to move the ball some with Harrison Bailey? Or like there are things to worry about with the Florida defense that still have not convinced me that Alabama is suddenly not going to score 49 points against Florida. Now, maybe Florida loses that game 49-45 and they look really great on offense. But if we're nitpicking here, the game didn't do a lot to convince me that Florida can win in a number of ways.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, the other two games in the SEC, we had a shootout. Yeah. Mizzou wins 50-48, a roller coaster of a game. Mizzou down 14 going into the fourth quarter. They storm back. They take the lead by 7. They give it up in the final minute. Then they win, and they go on a field goal, 50-48.
By the way, KJ Jefferson, really nice day.
KJ Jefferson, the freshman, right?
The freshman, yep. And it was Traylon Burks, I think, another huge game. It was Traylon Smith. Like, Arkansas's future is, it seems, very, very bright. Now, Mizzou has a ways to go themselves, but they won a crazy shootout clunker, and that's their season, right? Mizzou's done? Yeah. So, fun game, fun future for both of these teams, and hard to say that at all points late in the season. That, like, okay, these two teams played an entertaining game, and there's a lot to be optimistic about the both of them moving forward.
Yeah, and speaking of the future, I was going to say Kentucky went and won 41-18 over South Carolina. It was announced before we came on the show that Shane Beamer, the 43-year-old yes. son of Frank Beamer, current Oklahoma assistant, is going to be taking over that South Carolina job. We had heard a couple names, guys staying put, Billy Napier staying put, like Scott a couple Satterfield, guys yeah. who weren't going anywhere, but Shane Beamer has taken the job. So obviously more to come as that story is reported out a little bit further, but I saw our friend Bruce Feldman reported that earlier this morning. So congratulations.
Yeah, well-liked. What was at South Carolina before, well-liked in that area, obviously has ties to the mid-Atlantic South as well. So makes sense. Younger dude. I don't know how old he is. He's 43. Not 40, right?
43.
Oh, he is 43. Okay, so he just looks younger. Yeah, I think that is what kind of coach South Carolina, I don't know if it's him specifically, but a younger dude who has ties, wants to be there, wants to succeed, is optimistic, should be able to recruit well. That is what they need. I'm curious to see what his hires look like, because that will say a lot about him and his place in the coaching community, coordinator-wise, assistant-wise. But side note to this one, Najee Harris is the best running back in the SEC. I think we agree.
Yeah, sure.
Is Chris Rodriguez number two? He missed the last couple weeks, and I don't know how much you can take away from what doing against South Carolina, but when he's on the field, he's been consistently really, really good. Georgia's by committee, no Kylan Hill for the majority of this year. Isaiah Spiller, really nice year for A&M, certainly in that conversation. Florida has not been able to run the ball consistently. Tank Bigsby, when he's been on the field, really, really impressive, but Chris Rodriguez, you can kind of set your watch to, right?
Yeah, he's solid. He's really solid.
I think he might be that guy.
All right, let's move over to the Big 12, Dan.
No disrespect to Larry Three Sticks, of course.
Iowa State 42, West Virginia 6. Congratulations to your Iowa State Cyclones. They are your regular season.
Tired to tell ya.
Big 12 champion. They're 8 conference wins, the most in the history of the program. Mm-hmm. And obviously they do it in resounding fashion here against the top defense in the conference. 483 yards for the Clones. Absolutely no letdown effect at play. They scored in their first 3 possessions, led by Brock Purdy, who only missed 3 passes, had close to 250 and 3 touchdowns on the day. So a big showing for the Clones here, winning big over West Virginia. Most impressively, I'd say the defense turned in another strong showing. We're not going to confuse West Virginia for any kind of offensive juggernaut, but
no, they've struggled.
This is a really good effort by Iowa State to close out its season, and now they're going to square off against Oklahoma in 2 weeks in that conference championship game. So again, congratulations to Matt Campbell, Iowa State, really the whole program, all of its fans. This is a weird year, but an incredible season for them. No doubt about it.
Yeah, man, that special teams performance, though, against Louisiana, coming around, like, at this point, right? We're talking about playoff implications that we didn't know were playoff implications in week 1 for Iowa State. So, yeah, to take away the positive, you're right. The defense was fantastic, made West Virginia look lost on offense. I know there were some questionable non-PI situations, but I don't think ultimately that would have made a difference, because Iowa State has Breece Hall and West Virginia does not. Brock Purdy plays for Iowa State. West Virginia does not have Brock Purdy. It's, you know, we can overthink it, but Iowa State is the most complete team in the conference and has played the most completely impressive schedule in 2020 within the Big 12. And, hats off. Clones are great.
Oklahoma 27, Baylor 14, Dan.
Yeah.
You know, everyone dies.
Whoa, God, this got heavy real quick.
But only a select few of us got to truly live this game through the lens of the Twitter feed of friend of the show and co-managing editor of our Daily Bears, the one and only Peter Pope.
Yeah.
Good dude, fellow podcaster, sends me a Christmas card every year.
Wow.
Love Peter. Texts them from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
This was the worst kind of game to watch your favorite team play in, because you go into it expecting a loss. And while you're watching, your heart is looking at the scoreboard and saying, you know, it's 17-7, 20-7. This is this is doable, right? Like, teams come back from that all the time. But your eyes, Dan, your eyes see that the Oklahoma line is swatting down Chaz Brewer passes like they are horseflies. Your eyes see Baylor dinking and dunking and dinking and dunking every play. Your eyes see that they have good skill talent out there. They're just not finding ways to utilize it. And the contrast between what you see
Well, they were down like 11 scholarship running backs, I think.
I don't care. What you see and what you hope isn't quite enough to qualify as a pipe dream, but maybe a little too much to be reality. It's just, it's such a weird viewing experience right now to be a Baylor fan, especially in a game against Oklahoma. We're sure they're down guys, but you know they should be better. And it's frustrating to watch, especially when the passes kept getting swatted down. I think I saw six Chaz Brewer passes were swatted down.
Sure.
Baylor wasn't going to win this game, but they should have played better. There's no doubt.
You can choose to be a negative Nkosi. I'll use a college football first name. You can choose to be a negative Nkosi, but I'm going to look at that Baylor defense. Ron Roberts, Ty, came over from, I believe, Louisiana.
Big Ron, yeah.
Just to follow up, the snow, what did I call it? The snow, not snow alert, snow advisory
the with Phil Snow last advisory. Year? Yeah, I have to
the
find
Phil
that
snow
sound.
Advisory. Yeah. It's fine. They were the first defense to hold Baylor under 28 or under 30 in like 536 games. That number is made up.
Oklahoma,
but it's been a while.
Yeah, to hold Oklahoma under 28, yeah.
To hold Oklahoma, right. To hold Oklahoma under 30 or 28 or whatever. It felt like with the Baylor offense not holding up their end of the bargain, just the greatest snow plow on earth trying to do its thing in the middle of a blizzard. Like, okay, there's only so much that can be done here. And I guess shout out to the Baylor defense. It's Dave Aranda and Ron Roberts getting it done against an Oklahoma offense that has come on strong of late. But yeah, I don't know what the future looks like. Obviously, this is Chaz Brewer's final year. Well, I suppose he could come back, but it's probably his final year in Waco. Baylor needs to get 350% better on offense. And then this becomes an interesting program. And shout out to Oklahoma for scoring the points when they needed to. They weren't running the ball all that well. They weren't going downfield all that successfully, but they win by double digits. That counts.
TCU wins 29-22 over Oklahoma State. Did I not say on the Wednesday preview that this line was screaming for us to take TCU?
I stand by taking Oklahoma State. Even I would take Oklahoma State again, knowing the result, because I just refuse to align myself with whatever it took for TCU to win this game.
Well, it took Max Duggan. They built the whole thing out of Max Duggan. That's what it took. 369 in total yardage, three touchdowns, two of which were on the ground. Now, Oklahoma State still has a makeup game left against Baylor. But with this loss, they're officially out of it now for the Big 12. I'd like to hear from our Oklahoma State fans out there to get their take on this season, because I'm personally very disappointed by how this whole thing played out. I know they've had bad luck, and that shouldn't be understated. They've had bad luck. They've had a ton of injuries to deal with. And so it's all, you know, when you've got your top two running backs and Spencer Sanders and there's just a lot that's gone on there, but it still feels like they should have had a better season. And I'm curious to see if I, from afar, am the only one who feels that way, or if the folks inside that Pokes community are of the same mind. Because I don't know. I really, truly expected a lot more out of them this year.
I suppose. And that's okay, because there were reasons to expect a lot out of Oklahoma State.
No.
This game was just ugly. This game, I looked it up this morning. I tweeted it that this game featured 21 drives of four plays or less. Largely bad drives. Largely one play fumble, three plays, negative 1 yards, four plays, 13 yards. And I believe the number was also 16 punts, Ty. Mm. 16 punts. Mm. The impressive Max Duggan plays are so fun. But it's those either happen or it's a nightmare. Like, there's so little in between. Like, it's a deep, incredible pass or a long run, or it's just like, he didn't throw that anywhere near that receiver running a simple out pattern. And I feel for Frog fans, because that's a tough watch, knowing the ceiling, but without having the consistency. And so, I mean, I guess it felt that way a little bit too with Spencer Sanders. I stand by my logic looking at this game and saying, you know what, I'm going to Oklahoma State, because I have no idea what to expect from Max Duggan each play. And this is what you get. This is what you get with TCU. You're going to win these games with Max Duggan, and you're going to lose them. It's just a 50-50 shot. And what's TCU's record now? 5-4?
Yep.
That's their program. Yeah. That's their program. Okay.
All right.
Good win.
Staying with teams in the state of Texas, the Longhorns 69 K-State 31. Where was this game hiding for Texas all year?
Yeah, as long as Texas can play a largely inept offense.
Man, favored by just 7. They ran for 334 on the ground. Nice game from Bijan Robinson, from Rashawn Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they ran the hell out of the ball.
Deuce Vaughn did get loose in this game and had a good game, 10 for 125, 2 touchdowns for K-State, but 69-31, again, is your final. It's obviously not enough for one man to make up for a 38-point gap. And finally, Texas Tech 16, Kansas 13. This game feels a little bit like it violated one of Einstein's laws, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Should have been a runaway train, given Tech's offense, but they turned it over 4 times. They needed a field goal with 5 minutes left to actually get the win.
Yeah, I don't have many thoughts on Texas Tech Kansas. I did not watch any of Texas Tech Kansas. I thought the Red Raiders would separate themselves from the Jayhawks more, and they did not. I'll go back and watch this earlier on in the week. Didn't have a lot of implications for me.
Over to the Big Ten we go. Mm-hmm. Indiana 14. Wisconsin 6, Dan. Raise your hand if you had this one pegged as some sort of defensive slugfest.
This is the only game I think I picked right this week. So I guess me? I don't know.
All due credit to Indiana's defense. They played well here. They bottled up a talent like Graham Mertz, who you may recall threw for 5 touchdowns and missed just 1 pass against Illinois.
So what is when a player has this incredible early performance and we're still way, like Hackenberg had the full freshman year and we're just like, well, Hackenberg is a freshman. Like they're like, well, Graham Mertz against Illinois. Like at a certain point, we're gonna have to judge him by the merits of his most current game.
I think he still looks the part. And this is certainly not all on him, but we may have rushed to judgment there a little bit. The future is bright for Graham Mertz.
The Heismertz? Yeah.
The future is bright. Indiana gets the job done on defense. Jack Tuttle comes in and I thought looked fine, looked okay, filling in for Michael Penix, who blew out his knee, won't be playing the rest of the year, but 2 mm-hmm. touchdown passes for Tuttle. That was really all it took here. 14-6, defense held firm. 20 total points, maybe not what we expected, but Indiana continues its nice run, again, setting records for its program in terms of conference wins as well. In 2020, weird year, but working for Tom Allen.
Oh, 100% working for Tom Allen. The turnovers were key for both teams, keeping this close. I think Indiana had a wide open drop that would have easily gone for 6, and to watch that happen, and then later on in the game, have Graham Mertz and Wisconsin driving to potentially tie and maybe win this game in overtime or something like that. And to have to sit and stew and watch as Indiana potentially could lose. It's a rough watch, but Indiana pulls it out. Indiana beat Michigan, Penn State, and Wisconsin this year.
Yeah.
I don't care about the context right now. Someday we'll look back and say, remember that year Indiana? And they'll probably just go about, they'll win the old Oaken bucket, right? That's next week. My schedules are so off right now. But Indiana should be beating Purdue next week. Is that when they're playing this game?
I'll look it up. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yes, 12-12. Yes, 12, Purdue in Bloomington. So just the job Tom Allen has done, especially in a year where everybody's like, well, it's 2020. We didn't have spring practice. Indiana just lost their starting quarterback and then turned around and beat Wisconsin. The job Tom Allen has done, I don't think is anything short of like coach of the year nationally right now. He's just, it's fantastic to see what Indiana has done in Bloomington, taking advantage of down teams, coming together to win close games, giving the clear best team in the conference everything it could handle and more. Nothing short of fawning on my end, Ty.
Ohio State wins by 40 over Michigan State. Sounds like the powers that be are going to call an audible here and let Ohio State into the Big Ten title.
Who could have seen that coming?
In a huge shocker with just 5 games.
Listen, here's the meeting that happened. Listen. Sorry, I interrupted you. Continue.
I was going to say, I just don't think the Michigan game's going to be happening next week. It doesn't sound promising. So,
right.
I guess Ohio State's going to be in that title game now. It's fine. I mean, it is what it is. This wasn't a close game. Justin Fields accounted for 4 touchdowns, 2 running, 2 throwing. Chris Olave had a monster game. Trey Sermon had a nice game on the ground as well. So not really ever in doubt for the Buckeyes here. The real story around this game and their season is the fact that they're going to be able to play in that Big Ten game if it happens.
Yes, that's the story. Also, Justin Fields on the ground. Like, there are certain games, and, you know, I've watched large chunks of Ohio State's year. They just haven't been playing in good games and competitive games because they are that excellent. I've just been waiting to see what they do against a great team. Obviously, Michigan State, not that team. But just a great reminder about Justin Fields is amazing.
He's so good.
Is amazing. And even on plays, I think it was Trey Sermon who had the long touchdown run. I think that was the long touchdown run where Justin Fields ran with him and decided to just block the Michigan State safety at the very end of the play. Like, that's great. Garrett Wilson is going to be terrifying as a wide receiver for Ohio State. His just natural raw talent looks like he's just the next dude. That's just a fact. What was it? Haskell Garrett, the one who tipped the defensive lineman who tipped, was it Rocky Lombardi or Peyton Thorne throwing the interception that, I mean, it didn't go for a touchdown. It was just caught by the defensive lineman who tipped it in the end zone for a touchdown. Just Ohio State's really good. They were down a bunch of linemen, a bunch of players overall. Their head coach and Larry Johnson, who I will always dislike because he told all of the defensive linemen like 2 weeks ahead of the Oregon National Championship game, they're going to play fast. We should stop eating carbs and get in better shape. And they did, and it worked. So I'll always dislike him. I just crazy impressive. Michigan State is not a good team right now, and Ohio State, even down players, should have done this, and they did it, which is what great teams do.
3 other games here to close out the Big Ten. We had Penn State winning 23-7 over Rutgers. We had Iowa ripping off 35 unanswered points after they fell down in an early 14-0 hole. Mm-hmm. And then we had Nebraska winning by 10.
In a pseudo losing effort, didn't they jump out to a crazy big lead? And like, then it was close. Yes. I don't have any thoughts on the Illinois-Iowa game other than good for Iowa for getting their act together. I did not watch much of that explosive Spencer Petras-Brandon Peters duel. I'll skim through it soon in, I guess, more detail. But yeah, good for Iowa after their slow start, ruining Illinois, I believe, on some sort of senior homecoming day, whatever it was, in Champaign. Nebraska slowing down over the course of this game. Real humble performance from Nebraska. But Adrian Martinez, once again, came on relatively strong, right, in this game? No, connected with Wandale Robinson impressively.
Scott Frost said after the game that he had actually planned on playing Luke McCaffrey more, but Martinez had such momentum that he ended up getting majority of the snaps. I would assume he's going to close out the year as a starting quarterback at this point.
I don't know what Jeff Brohm's buyout is. I don't think he's going to get fired by Purdue anytime soon, but he's making a lot of money, and they are currently 2-4.
Yeah, they've lost their last 4 after starting 2-0.
Yep.
And Penn State, nice dominant effort on the defensive side of the ball, held Rutgers down just around 200 total yardage. I think
winning streak.
Yeah, I think they are starting to look better. It's not saying a whole lot, but I think I think they are starting to figure this thing out. Okay,
you like Kevon Lee? Is that's his name, Kevon Lee?
Kevon Lee, freshman. I can't keep them all straight, to be honest, Dan.
Devin Ford. Yeah,
they've got so many running backs at this point, but no, Kevon Lee had a good game.
Cool.
Let's go over to the ACC very quickly. We had wins by Notre Dame, by Clemson, by Miami, by North Carolina, NC State, and Virginia. You texted me about Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Saying, and you want to be my latex salesman.
Yeah.
This is a really misshapen game for Notre Dame. The first quarter was awful. That's when you were texting me. The second quarter, they put up 21. They led
right
by 17 at half. Eventually, they go on to win by 24. So in the end, not a close game, but this was far from a clean game. for right. the Irish. Syracuse shot itself in the foot a bunch of times with some dumb mistakes, four turnovers. I'm not going to say that if things all go right for Syracuse that they win this football game. I don't think that's the case, but Syracuse had an opportunity to make this one a lot closer than they did. And ultimately, it was those mistakes that really got in their way here. The two bright spots that I'll just point out quickly on the Notre Dame side. We've talked about Ian Book building up a rapport with Ben Skowronek, but we saw a little bit more of that rapport with Javon McKinley in this game, who had 7 grabs for a 111 and 3 touchdowns through the air. They're going to need that as they go into the ACC title game and presumably into the playoff sure. as well. And secondly, the ground game is
presumably a playoff team. Interesting.
The ground game is still really good for Notre Dame. Kyron Williams seems like he's getting better as well with each game. But
yeah.
again, Ian Book's ability to move the pocket, to extend plays, to scramble, it really is, and it can't be overstated, how significant a part of the Notre Dame offense that is. Even if it's not the official play call, Book on the ground with what he's able to do is really kind of like the unsung hero of this Notre Dame offense. So they get the job done 45-21 over Cuse.
Okay. Did this change your perception of Notre Dame's future starting the way that they did once again?
It didn't change anything for me, but the fact that they started slowly is significant. You know, it's something to watch. They're clearly winning the games. They finished their regular season now undefeated 10-0. But we'll have to keep an eye on that as they play against Clemson again. I don't know.
They've started slowly often this year. Yeah,
they have.
I don't know that they lose this game to an average ACC team, because ultimately I think there's just too many ways for Notre Dame to win. That defense can clamp up in a number of different ways, and the offense can move the ball in a number of different ways. But it's concerning when they potentially need to stop Devontae Smith.
Right.
And sort of not let floodgates open up in the first quarter when they're a slow starting team. That's concerning. But everybody should be concerned about stopping Devontae Smith, to be clear, though.
Clemson wins by 35, 45-10 over Virginia Tech. Sometimes, Dan, sometimes the gambling gods smile upon us.
Smile upon thee.
And sometimes you just happen to log on to FanDuel, not a sponsor.
Not a sponsor.
Exact
open
right
to
time.
It. Open to
open
it.
Open to it, of course. You sign on at the exact right time, right after Trevor Lawrence throws a pick in the end zone as Clemson's only leading by 7.
And you see an amazing play.
You see that the live point spread is Clemson minus 13.5. And then maybe you put a few shekels on that, and Clemson ends up winning by 5 touchdowns. It was not
like a pumpkin pie cooling on the sill.
It was not the cleanest game for Clemson, nor Trevor Lawrence, nor Travis Etienne, but it was far worse for Virginia Tech. They gave up 3 turnovers, had a couple of quarterbacks go down with injuries, some bad red zone turnovers. Like it was not meant to be for them. Clemson finishes its regular season at 9-1. Again, they, along with Notre Dame, do not have to play next week and can just skip right ahead to the conference championship game in 2 weeks.
If you are an optimistic Clemson fan, you're looking at this game as not wanting to show anything, run very vanilla, run very basic offensive sets. Don't try to go too deep too often. Cornell Powell, hell of a play after the catch. I think he had 60-70 yard touchdown catch in this one, the younger receiver. So I'm not going to extrapolate a ton from this, but I am going to just like Clemson plays down for stretches in ways that they haven't in years past. Right?
Yeah.
Just between this and Syracuse and Boston College, and they eventually win comfortably, and you need to play exceptional for 4 quarters to beat Clemson, a team of their caliber. And Virginia Tech just, they have the ability to win games if you like build the entire plane out of 2.5 drives early. That's the kind of team Virginia Tech is, but Hendon Hooker and the turnovers and being beat up, and just the thing I take away from this game is Khalil Herbert is one of the best running backs in the country. He's running behind a good line, but really, really impressive. Runs with great burst and vision and should be playing at the next level.
All right. Elsewhere, we had Miami blanking Duke 48-0. A nice game for De'Aaron King.
Great game.
Did you know that Miami is 8-1 and currently ranked 10th, Dan?
And snap their Duke losing streak.
And snap their Duke losing streak. Unlike Clemson and Notre Dame, they did not land on the right Monopoly space. They cannot advance straight to the ACC championship game, but they do have North Carolina next week, which should be an interesting game that obviously we're going to talk a lot more about on the Wednesday preview. But 48-0. Big.
Who would you take between Miami and A&M?
I would take A&M.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah, I would take A&M. We had North Carolina winning by 40 over Western Carolina. We had NC State winning 23-13 over Georgia Tech. And we had Virginia 43-32 over Boston College. One of the great losing efforts of the day as Boston College's Dennis Grozel with 520 yards and 4 touchdowns in a losing effort. Any thoughts?
Bailey Hockman, another nice game for NC State. Brennan Armstrong in a winning effort, Ty.
Yeah.
There, I have some thoughts about that. What an interesting quarterback moving forward for Virginia. I believe he's only a sophomore, right?
Yeah, had a nice 60-yard touchdown run, had 130 in total on the day. UVA's now won 4 in a row.
On the ground, yeah. Virginia's interesting to me. One of those teams that this is a year that it seems particularly difficult to get stronger as the season goes on, but obviously roster availability affects those things and cancellations, postponements, injuries. Like these are all more pronounced in 2020 than usual. But yeah, there are a number of ACC teams who have, and you mentioned NC State, they finished what, 8-3?
Very quiet.
We talked about that as
ultra quiet, 8-3.
Ultra quiet 8-3. I know a Verballer mentioned it on the Reverbs about Tim Beck, and they had a really nice year. NC State had a really, really nice year, to me, unexpectedly. So with that kind of turnover, I was not expecting anything more than perhaps a 500 season, but it worked out for the Wolfpack. It has worked out relatively well for the Hoos. Have a chance. Are they playing next week against Tech? Is that when this game is happening? It appears to be the case.
Check.
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
It is.
Yep. Yeah,
in
it is.
Blacksburg.
Right.
6-4 would be a wild success for Virginia, considering their lows at times this year.
All right. And finally, let's move on over to the Pac-12, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
Cal 21, Oregon 17.
Not familiar.
Big fourth down stop for Cal. Yeah. 2 forced fumbles in the fourth quarter. The Bears defense gets the better of your Oregon Ducks here, 21-17. What the hell happened?
I'm going to talk about this through the lens of the television program, The Hills. No. There was always that theory that, like, everybody's so mean to Lauren. Everybody's so mean to Lauren. Like, maybe Lauren's the mean one. Oregon loses to a lesser Oregon State, quote unquote lesser. Oregon loses to a lesser Cal, quote unquote lesser. Maybe Oregon's lesser. Maybe Oregon's that team. What happened in this game? Very little in the way of offense. Tyler Shuck looked dazed and confused, especially in the second half. Oregon's offense did nothing. And I think we agree that Joe Moorhead is an inventive, creative, successful offensive coordinator. And Oregon couldn't get anything going against a pretty talented, there's interesting linebackers. Cameron Bynum's the best DB in the Pac-12, probably. But Oregon had opportunities. And it just, in watching this game, there were elements that were predictable in the way that Oregon's offense was predictable last year, which makes me think it's not a Joe Moorhead thing, just in those high leverage situations. You mentioned that fourth down stop. The turnovers weren't great outside of like the space right before halftime. Oregon's offense didn't do anything this game. And so I'm inclined to believe at this point after, and this is a strange year for sure, I'm inclined to believe that Tyler Shuck is not a long-term answer for Oregon at quarterback. Just the lack of confidence. If you can't get it done at Cal in an empty stadium, and Oregon has aspirations in the way that they recruit, the way they spend money, the way that they hire coordinators, of winning this conference more often than not, being a New Year's Six level team, if not playoff team, it's hard to imagine that this is acceptable offensively. So they're not all that good. They're young, they're inexperienced, but if you need those high leverage moments to beat this year's Cal team, you're nowhere near where you should be talent wise, or excuse me, you're nowhere near where you should be given the talent on hand. So they're not all that good.
All right. Other action in the Pac-12. We had four other games. We've actually got one tonight, Sunday night.
True.
That's going to be played between Wazoo and USC. But we had Colorado staying undefeated, a game that featured 675 rushing yards against Arizona combined. 675 rushing
yards. Playoff hopeful Colorado. Continue.
407 for Colorado, 268, including 301 from Jarek Broussard for the Buffaloes, only on 25 carries. Talk me through your Colorado playoff scenario that you were texting about yesterday.
Well, if they go undefeated, it relied on Oregon being slightly better in terms of a resume. Because it would mean Colorado beating a ranked USC and a ranked Oregon and comparing those two wins against Ohio State's wins against Indiana and Northwestern, potentially Northwestern. So Colorado's playoff resume has taken a hit, Ty. I'm going to tell you right now, yeah, breaking news. It has really taken a hit. But their schedule's not horrible. They have USC and I believe Utah left. Colorado does. Those are winnable games. And the Pac-12 North certainly seems like a mess, usually the class of the conference. But with Washington losing the way that they did, giving up a lot on the ground, and Colorado having Jarek Broussard being able to move the ball like they are, and Oregon 1 week looking strong on defense and then the next week looking terrible on defense, they're not, I mean, if Oregon makes that game. So I am very happy that Colorado is taking advantage of a very strange year with a first year head coach and staff largely. Fun to see a team actually rise to a strange occasion rather than shy away from it.
Utah wins over Oregon State. They led by 20 in the fourth quarter. They held off a late charge by the Beavers. Nice game on the ground from my man, Ty Jordan. 27 carries, 167.
Good year for Ty running backs.
It really
is. You had the Tyler Algier. You had Ty Chandler at Tennessee having a nice year. Yeah. Really nice year.
We had UCLA by 7 over ASU, a late touchdown from Demetric Felton.
Yeah.
And Stanford winning by 5 against Washington, 31-26. That game is on the road. Good games for Davis Mills and Austin Jones. The Washington defense could not get off the field, Dan. Stanford was something like 10 of 13 on third downs.
Yeah, it's the worst. Getting strangled like that is not pleasant. I've been there with Stanford teams as an Oregon fan. It's not all that pleasant. UCLA, DTR returns. And as you mentioned, the late Demetric Felton touchdown wins that one against a talented but still obviously ravaged roster-wise Arizona State program. UCLA very quiet. What, 3-2?
Yep.
And they finish out with USC next week, so we'll see what happens there. Just a nice little bounce back year for Chip Kelly, potential to go 4-2 and go to a bowl game. I feel like we should all know what Stanford's going to do on offense. And Washington is just like, we got some tricks up our sleeve. And that trick involved not playing large people up front. I watched the game this morning and just keeping a lot of DBs on the field and just suffering through mismatches as Stanford pounded them on the ground. Davis Mills had a nice game himself, both through the air and a little bit on the ground. But yeah, Washington fell down. What did Washington fall down in this game? Like 24-3? Something dramatic again, once again, going down big early and then needing to claw back into this game. And just, I don't know. I feel like we've seen Stanford play football before. You should lose on the merits of a solid game plan, not being stubborn. And that's what Washington was against Stanford. So the Pac-12 North is a mess, and that's okay. Also, it was Chance Nolan and Chance Nolan in place of Tristan Jebbia for Oregon State in this losing effort. Also, no Jamar Jefferson. Difference maker for the Beavs. So that hurt them against the Utah team, which they've got 2.5 good quarters in them. The rest is a wild card.
All right. Very quickly, some of the other action around college football. We had Rice knocking off Marshall 20-0. Marshall threw 5 picks, which did not help. We had Tulsa 19-7 over Navy. We had Louisiana knocking off App State 24-21. This one was played, I think, on Thursday or Wednesday or earlier in the week.
Yeah.
Suffice to say. We talked about the Coastal game before in sort of like that vein of outside the Power Five that we always tend to address. Any mm-hmm. other games that were notable to you?
Eastern Michigan, Western Michigan, Eagles fully defeated, Western Michigan fully undefeated. Who wins? Of course, Eastern. Of course, Eastern in some beautiful action. I think it was 53-42, bit of a shootout there. You mentioned the Marshall Rice game. I think the Rice upset was like one of the five biggest in terms of point spread upsets in the last 10, 15, 20 years. So yeah, good for the Owls. And also when a team who has been really good, especially on offense, throws five picks out of nowhere, I just always assume that they got Rogue One'd, right? It was Rogue One is where they steal the plans
right.
for the Death Star.
Yeah.
I just assume somebody at Rice infiltrated Marshall and like, okay, right. this is their exact game plan. These are the exact routes the receivers are running in this order, whatever. So good for Rice. It's a tricky offense to stop when it's humming, but yeah, it was the defense that won the day for Rice. Good for Tulsa setting up that battle, I believe, this coming week with Cincinnati and taking care of business against Navy. I mentioned San Jose State earlier. They beat a tough Hawaii team. They're 5-0 now. Do you know that that ties their, I think, relatively recent or all? I have no idea, but they haven't won more than five games in quite some time. No. And that's going 5-7. Now yeah, they're 5-0.
Right.
So really good of the Spartans getting that job done. Tulane, who now loses their offensive coordinator, Will Hall. He's going to be the head coach at Southern Miss, I believe, in a winning effort against Memphis, which is tough. Beating Memphis is tough, as down as Memphis is roster-wise. Troy blank South Alabama ahead of, I believe that's who Coastal has finishing out the year, at least before Louisiana. As I scroll through here, New Mexico in Vegas, their new home, edging out Wyoming by one. So I like to see that. I like to see New Mexico get on the board. It's Danny Gonzalez, I believe, their new head coach. So nice to see him get his first win. San Diego State doing right by Colorado's strength of schedule tie, taking down the Rams of Colorado State. FAU, who had been having a good year, basically got blanked by Georgia Southern. Sorry, Willie Taggart. And outside of that, I don't know if there's anything that fully stood out to me. I thought Arkansas State would have a better year. Nice win for Ball State over the Chips. I don't believe Kent State played this week. I'm monitoring Sean Lewis, Ty. That's what I'm telling you. Yeah, that game against Miami got canceled. And of course, I mean, all of the cancellations, because these are the games we didn't obviously talk about. Vandy, Georgia, Northwestern, Minnesota, Kent State, Miami of Ohio, Maryland, Michigan, Buffalo, Ohio, which means we couldn't get watch the fun Bulls of Buffalo, and Houston, SMU, just not meant to be.
All righty. Well, that does it for the week 14 recap, Daniel.
Appreciate. Oh, I do have dudes if we want to get into
oh,
it.
Oh, do we have dudes? We have yeah, to do yeah. dudes. Where's my sound yeah. here? Hold on. How can we forget dudes? We can't forget dudes.
Devontae Smith is retired. Bye-bye, Devontae Smith. Go play midfield for Everton or something. Jalen Phillips for Miami had a fantastic game. I mentioned Haskell Garrett of Ohio State with the tip and touchdown. Also, as mentioned before, shot last winter. Trying to apparently defend the honor of an older lady. That's what I have here. I didn't memorize it, but that was Kirk Johnston submitting that tweet. So if I got that wrong, it was in August. Shot in the face in August, score a touchdown in December. Deuce Vaughn in a losing effort. Dennis Grossel in a losing effort. Still a dude, regardless. I would say the Texas running game. Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson, I think they had dude games and a nice comeback effort.
Yeah.
Apparently, Ian Book is Notre Dame's new all-time winningest quarterback.
Yes, that's correct.
That is correct. Okay. Cam Taylor-Britt had a nice game for Nebraska. Let's say Javon McKinley for Notre Dame. How about that?
Sure.
A receiver going downfield impressively. I think that's all I have. I think that's truly. Right. Am I forgetting anybody else that you want to add? Oh, Jarek Broussard going for 300-plus is not insignificant, even if it was against Arizona.
Okay, now we've done it. That does
now
it for
we've done it.
Week 14 recap. Look, playwinterwonders.com is the name of the cool game that we're running for our Patreon mm-hmm. subscribers. We would urge you to go on out there. Check out what you need to in order to get in on the fun. We're going to be...
I can't wait.
...getting that thing started in fairly short order. Obviously, need games to be announced first, but... We're getting the train rolling here to jump aboard and and have some fun throughout bowl season. Look, we're all looking for something to do at this point, some sort of fun to be had. And I think you and I have some big plans for this. So playwinterwonders.com is where you can get in on that action, as well as check out our Patreon. Don't forget to follow along on social media, Dan.
Yeah.
And I think that's all I got. My back is killing me from the stool that I'm sitting on. I need to come up with a better solution.
You're talking about the piece of furniture or something else?
No, this learning stool that I'm sitting on. This thing is so uncomfortable. I need to get something with a back on it.
Yeah. Stop complaining. You gotta treat yourself, Ty. You gotta treat yourself. All right, that's all I have.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildebrandt, we will talk to you all very, very soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.